Hello, welcome to another episode of MLB Talk. My name is Andrew. I am joined by Chase, and today Nadia is finally with us.
Yay!
Small round of applause for Nadia, who's actually here. I'm going to apologize right now for any technical difficulties we may experience. On our end right now, we are all hearing quite a bit of outside noise, we'll say, and it's making things a little difficult, but please bear with us.
It just kind of sounds like we're doing like a broadcast from like the 50s.
I was thinking that, or we are the last people on Earth after like some kind of major apocalypse, and there was also an EMP in the air. So
well, if that's the case, that means there's probably only one or two survivors, if they're even listening.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this, you're live. You're not a zombie. Congratulations. As always, you are listening to us at UCLAradio.com. And if you'd like to call us, we have a phone number. You can call it. It still works despite the apocalyptic circumstances that we are embroiled in. And the number for that phone would be 310-794-9348. That's 310-794-9348. So before we do anything else, I just want to get into the most important news of the day, which I think is especially relevant because of what's happening right now. I just feel like it's all these crazy things are happening at once. So I might as well go out and say it. There is a minor league, or not, an 18-year-old international free agent whose name is Lucius Fox, everybody. Batman? Do people care about that? I care about that. I think this is great. I also think he's never going to make it as a major leaguer because I know he's going to make stuff for Wayne Enterprises. So I just thought everyone should know that. It's a great way to start the show. Go look him up.
He's going to end up on the Padres. Hey, he's going to end up on the Padres.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely. Honestly, that would be the most amazing thing that's ever happened.
It'll make me want to revive the That's So Padres segment.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Well, now that you're back, I think maybe we can revive it. Although, I don't...
You act like I was gone for, like, a year. I was like, what?
No, you were gone for a long
time.
4 weeks? Let's be real. Felt like an eternity.
4 weeks in radio. That's, like, 2 years.
Yeah, it is, like, 2 years. I totally agree. And maybe we should open the doors. Okay. Anyways, I'm sorry, folks. This is ridiculous. Like, imagine if you were giving a broadcast outside in pouring rain. That is what I feel like we are going through right now.
I think that's a little generous, to be honest.
You think that's generous? Okay, cool. So we're going to get into the real big news of very recently, which is basically the bad blood that is boiling around baseball. There's been a lot of it lately. And I want to start with the less exciting thing, but more confusing, and also happened earlier last week, so I just want to jump into it. So Ubaldo Jimenez, once a great pitcher for the Colorado Rockies, now a much less not as good pitcher for the Orioles, was pitching against the Red Sox. He had a no-hit bid, right? I think so. Yeah, I think he had not given up a hit through 3 2/3 innings, but had given up 3 walks because he's Ubaldo. He can't throw strikes. And he hit Panda in the back, and without warning, Ubaldo was ejected from the game. And Buck Showalter, of course, came out and argued with the home plate ump, whose name is Jordan Baker. If you look him up, honestly, he probably just graduated college like a couple of years ago or something. He's just super young, and he looked totally flustered when Showalter came up to him. And I was wondering if you guys felt that. Was Baker right to eject Ubaldo just for hitting Panda in the back without warning? And do you think that, you know, some of the unwritten rules that used to be a big part of the game are still very important?
I think for one thing that this umpire was definitely stuck with the wrong manager to have to deal with in the first place. Buck Showalter is someone who has never been afraid to voice his opinion and is kind of just an angry human being, I feel like, a lot of the time. So I think to some degree, you know, Baker looked probably pretty flustered because dealing with Buck isn't easy. But on the flip side, like what you said before, there's always been this unwritten, I guess, rule of baseball that states if you do something to my team, we're going to do something back, whether it be like in the A's Royals, a hard slide and a guy gets hit by a pitch. And I think with that, the problem is, you know, baseball, for lack of a better phrase, is kind of going soft, in my opinion, a little bit. There's no other way for me to really describe it. I think you look back in the 70s and 80s, guys would get hit with 95-mile-per-hour fastballs, but it was part of the game. And now, every time it happens, it's a big story online. It's a big story on Twitter and everything. And I think the game's just – it's changed. I think social media and constant, you know, news updates have definitely made baseball – into a little bit of a less gritty sport than it once was.
Yeah, I don't think that was deserving at all of an injection that quickly. But I do have to say, I very much so enjoy watching Buck Showalter get in an umpire's face. So whether it's right or wrong, doesn't matter at this point because it's always fun to watch him just like, I feel bad for that umpire.
Well, I mean, to be, in my opinion, he totally deserved it.
He did?
Well, yeah.
That quickly?
No, not Jimenez. I'm saying to get scalded.
Oh, then, I thought you meant...
No, in the post-game press conference, Showalter even said that was professionally embarrassing. And to be honest, I agree. If you look at just the standard, I mean, yeah, there are rule justifications for it, but it was just out of place. And it's almost like he didn't know who... He thought, like, Greg Maddux was on the mound or something.
Yeah, no, I wonder what, in the umpire world, like, how reputations go, you know? Like, when you're young, how long do things like that stick with you in the umpire world? Yada, yada, yada. Because it's not like, I mean, we only hear the, like, very select few names, but they all know each other. Like, you know, you just wonder what the cred is in between them.
The umpire locker room?
Yeah,
you want to see those dynamics?
Yeah,
it had the most technical jargon, like...
I will to add to the tale of Jordan Baker, looking at his Wikipedia page, a few fun facts about the man behind the story. At 6'7", he is the tallest MLB umpire. But going back, Andrew, was it last week or 2 weeks ago when we talked about the Derek Norris and the gum-throwing incident?
That was last week.
So, according to Wikipedia, which we all know how reliable that is, so this must be true, Jordan Baker has gained media attention and criticism in the past for throwing bubblegum on the field during games. So Derek Norris is the catcher. I'll ask you this. If the umpire threw gum in his direction, would he still be very angry?
Yes, and I think he would also go and call him bad names in the postgame, just like he did for Angel Pagan. So definitely... Definitely things are not looking good for Jordan Baker. I'm pretty sure MLB actually does have like an umpire correctional system in the sense that if someone calls a really bad game that they'll, you know, potentially prevent them from, you know, umpiring playoff games or fine them or, you know, not to an extreme level, but on some kind of disciplinary scale, I do expect Jordan Baker to get some kind of the equivalent of a slap on the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
But let's move on to the really crazy stuff, especially when it comes to hitting people. The Royals and A's, officially the newest rivalry of baseball, I would say. So, for those who don't know, Brett Lowry pretty much started this whole thing by sliding very heavily, I don't know, very aggressively into second base, injuring Alcides Escobar. And the two of them were actually prospects together in the Milwaukee system, so they do know each other. And Brett Lowry, who is friends with Royals first baseman Eric Hosmer, got Escobar's number, texted him an apology, and then he showed it to reporters in the press conference. Escobar said that the play was super dirty and that he didn't respect Lowry very much, and he showed them his phone. He didn't get the text. And then everything after that, you know, just went berserk. Like, honestly, I don't know what it is about texting that makes these baseball players so angry. But, you know, both teams plunked two guys each, I think, and... It just got out of control. Kelvin Herrera threw at 100 miles an hour at Lowry's back, which I can't even imagine what that would feel like. And he also gestured to his head, saying next time, like basically suggesting next time it's your head, which, I mean, oh my gosh, that's really scary. I think there's actually a comic book villain who was a major league pitcher and like killed a couple people or something. Anyhow, so... This whole thing has been crazy. I just want to know, more than anything else, do you guys think that there is one team in particular to blame in this situation? And to give some history that I think is particularly helpful, the A's had a big scrum with the O's last year that was fairly similar to this, and the Royals so far have been hit 14 times in 13 games.
I don't necessarily think that there's a team to blame in this argument/fight. I think the A's definitely pride themselves on doing the little things right, and part of that, at least in my opinion for baseball, has always been you play the game hard. And yes, I saw the slide. It definitely looked a little dirty, but I don't think Lowry slid with the intention of injuring a former teammate's knee and taking him out. And I think on the flip side, if you're the Royals, the big problem here is Greg Holland, who's their superstar closer, just went on the DL. So Herrera, I know it's only a 5-game suspension, but the central between them, the Tigers, even the Indians, the White Sox, when they eventually rebound, if they do, it's going to be a really tight division where 5 games might make a difference, where you're now losing the guy who would be your setup man, Wade Davis, and one of the better middle mid to late relievers in baseball. So I think the Royals just need to recognize that, you know, you almost have to pick your fights. Ventura's going to get he got fined. Who knows if there's still discipline coming for him. That's their ace. You know, if you from this one game lose your ace and one of the main components of your bullpen, you just have to think eventually, is this really worth it for what pretty much amounted to just an old-school baseball play? And then on the additionally, Herrera, I get that you want to be a good teammate, and I'm all for that. I think there's definitely room in baseball, but 100 mile per hour is at their head. That's when you go from, you know, grit and playing the game right, quote unquote, to like killing a guy. So I think the A's are the ones that definitely started this, but I think the Royals definitely crossed the line and probably took this way, much, way, way further than it needed to be.
Well, what I was going to say is the way that this is all blown up after the fact with the text messaging, with the yada, 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 it confirms, it just reconfirms your point you were saying earlier, is that how soft the game is getting in that sense where it's getting catty. And when you involve things like social media and all of, like, you know, like just the press involvement in this way, it just really puts a bad taste in people's mouths, not just about the situation in general, but it happens in every single one of situations like this, which, if you want to really get big picture, if you're trying to get more fans of the game, let's not have baseball headline with arguments about things like this.
But isn't it kind of exciting in a way? I mean, there's a sort of different level of stakes here. I mean, to be completely honest, looking at it from a pure entertainment standpoint, I don't necessarily hate it.
I think the action on the field and what happened on the field was a source of entertainment. But you want to you want to entertain on the field. You don't want entertainment to be, you know, the Alex Rodriguez, like, stupid fluff that gets added when bad things happen. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I think that kind of shows to me that perhaps the game is going through a bit of a transition where the drama is now being merged into, you know, sort of the internet, social media culture that we have. And I think in some ways players are getting soft, but in other sense, for the world that we live in now where information is so readily available, and this is something that we're definitely going to talk about later too, their approach is almost extremely callous, I would say. So I think that's very interesting. Another note, Yordano Ventura is becoming a bad boy. This is the second straight start for him in which he's left early after an altercation. You know, last week against the Angels, of course, after the Mike Trout home run, he sort of blew up, and then Yost just pulled him, which I guess was a good move. Is Ventura sort of getting in his own way here, or is this just sort of a bad team malaise for now?
I think the biggest thing with Ventura at this point is truthfully seeing if he could be your frontline guy who can give you 7-8 innings every start, just because between throwing at guys, he's had to leave a couple starts. He left his first two starts with an injury, which were both very good starts, but he didn't go past 7 innings. So if I'm the Royals, I'm kind of concerned of, one, is our ace a lunatic? But also, two, is this a guy who, you know, the thing with James Shields was, even when he wasn't dominant last year, Shields was still going 6-7 innings every single start, no matter what his stuff was. Ventura, to me, hasn't proved that he can do that quite yet, even though he has a good track record from the postseason and the stuff to be an ace. He hasn't really shown that he has that ace mentality almost.
I think it's very interesting how suddenly the flip has this. Wow. I've done this a couple times lately. The script has flipped from the Royals being a team where get them to the sixth inning with a lead and it's over to, oh my God, how are we going to finish the game? It's definitely going to be a concern for this team. I think losing a couple of relievers for a few games like hardly affects win expectancy at all. But in terms of like the whole hierarchy, it's going to be drastic. So definitely going to have to keep a lookout for that going forward. And I think now it's time for our slightly new segment, which we have started last week, our hot and not players. So the way this works is each of us picks a player or a group of players who are doing great and something or someone who's doing not that great. So who wants to go first?
I'll start it off for the hot. I have one hitter and one pitcher from the past week. So my hot hitter is going to be Nelson Cruz. He was a guy who signed that one-year deal with Baltimore kind of as a show-me contract, hit 40 homers and was rewarded with a big four-year extension from the Mariners. And a lot of people wondered if, well, he played in Texas, he played in Baltimore, two hitters' parks, if the move to Seattle would really affect him. And I think this week kind of showed that Nelson Cruz is back and he's for real. He was 12 for 25 with four homers, nine RBIs, which equates to a .480 average. He also hit a walk-off single against the Rangers after they had intentionally walked Robinson Cano to pitch to him. So he is my hot hitter of the week. I was at the Dodgers game last Wednesday, and that home run he hit out the center was one of the farthest shots I've seen in person in quite a long time. And then my hot pitcher for the week, it kills me to say it because we kind of threw him in as part of the Didi Gregorius trade, we being the Yankees, but that would be Shane Green. This guy is pretty much a fastball, slider, changeup guy, if that, but his past two starts, he's pitched 15 innings, he's given up one earned run, only given up eight hits. He's 2-0 in that time with a .6 ERA and a .8 whip. And it really, really pains me to say this when the Yankees' rotation has just been super inconsistent. And here you have this guy just churning out great starts and making the Tigers' rotation look like much more of a strength than anyone thought it would be, you know, coming into the year when it was David Price and then who was going to step up behind that.
Quick note on Nelson Cruz here. I think there's, like, for some reason, this very, like, large misperception about his power. If you look through his career, and I've noticed a lot of people feel this way, he's never, in, like, a season where he's had, like, I think at least 120 games, he's never hit less than, like, 24 bombs or something like that. I found that very surprising, and it looks like Seattle really made the right choice here. I think of all the power hitters, he seems to be one of the most park-resistant. You know, and you don't. I guess we don't really see those types of guys anymore, and that's really cool. So, Nadia, you want to go next?
I was going to say, is it like all hot and then all not, or is it?
So you could do it whatever way you want. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going with a guy who NL runner-up of the week. We like to call him "This Is How We Do It," Kendrick, who originally the Dodgers picked him up. You know what? Knowing that they had some defensive voids to fill, and this guy did it. At the plate, he is getting older. He's consistent, not going to know what he's going to expect. He blew it out of the park this week. And this is a guy who, like I said, was really just going to be relied on for a lot of defensive improvement. It's really shown that he can be a big bat. And, you know, I might as well throw Jimmy Rollins with this as well. Another guy expected to be just a huge defensive upgrade and where people weren't really expecting them to, you know, be offensive power superstars on a lineup that, you know, just threw away Matt Kemp, not threw away. I think it was smart getting rid of Matt Kemp and Hanley Ramirez. So, and they've done absolutely, I think, a lot better than
I'll add just to your Dodgers in terms of being hot. How about Scott Van Slyke out there?
Oh, I was just telling someone any other pretty much major league, maybe not. He's a starting outfielder anywhere else, and he is the fifth Dodger outfielder. I mean, I get excited when I see Scott Van Slyke's name in the lineup every single time because you know what you're going to get. Always consistent. He's got power. Consistent defender. I mean, like, and he, you know, you throw him in first base too. Throw him wherever. He's great. And I just, you wonder when you're a guy like Scott Van Slyke who's just so happy-go-lucky and just, you know, is he like itching to, like, he has to be itching for a starting spot somewhere, but the Dodgers organization has really just like welcomed him and he's a really good fit there at the same time. So at least in the clubhouse wise, anyways. Yeah, no, Scott Van Slyke, man.
So this is crazy because this big thought just occurred to me at once. I'm gonna start with my not group because it's not one particular player. And that group would be the San Francisco Giants offense. Now, I wanted to break up this whole West Coast thing we were doing and talk about my hot players of the week who both happened to play for Tampa Bay. But I'm just going to go with this because this is where we're going right now. San Francisco Giants offense has been terrible. Buster Posey even taking extra BP today, which he never does because his swing is made of pure gold and there's no reason you should do that unless things are going terrible. But other than him, this team's got no power. Besides Brandon Belt, who has turned into, honestly, I don't know. He's literally hitting like a draft now. And I this is a player I've always supported, honestly, more than any other player, honestly. Not like someone who I would ever give up on, and I'm just getting sick of it. And without Hunter Pence until now, probably mid-May, because his broken arm is taking longer to heal, you'd think an alien would be able to repair their own broken arm fairly quickly. But nonetheless, the team is very, very devoid of power, and that just goes to doubles. I mean, honestly, right now, if you asked me who is the second best hitter on this team behind Buster Posey that's in the lineup right now, I would almost be inclined to say Matt Duffy, honestly. Because Angel Pagan is just hitting singles, so is Aoki, and you need someone. Duffy has more doubles and more homers than both of them, and he is the skinniest guy on the team. I don't know if you guys have seen him. He's amazing. I'm probably going to get his jersey. But nonetheless, Scott Van Slyke is like the perfect fit because he can play some outfield, he can play some first base, and those are absolutely the Giants' biggest holes. And the Dodgers could honestly, like, I don't know, probably get Suzak because the Giants' front office is failing right now. And that would be a win-win for both teams. That would never happen.
And I don't think that's something – well, but it just – are we trying to stray away from, like, the West Coast stuff? Because if we're just going to talk – I feel like the Dodgers have their bench is so deep that with this new front office, I'm curious to see what ends up, who ends up going where for what as time continues, because I feel like they're going to get crafty with some, like, they're pretty deep players.
Yeah, well, I'm inside the NL West. I mean, you've got two teams who have probably the most free-thinking GMs in the league, and that just that makes for a lot of excitement. So I definitely expect pieces on both the Dodgers and Padres to swirl around during the year. But for you two, now it is your time to pick your not players of the week.
Regretfully, both of, well, one of mine's a West Coast player, the other's a Midwest player. So my not bat, he has absolutely just done my fantasy team dirty for all the wrong reasons. That would be the Houston Astros designated hitter, Chris Carter.
Wait, that was my person.
Aww.
Okay, go ahead.
Needless to say, that should tell you how bad Chris Carter is, though, when two of your three hosts decide that he is the least hot not player in baseball. You're doing something wrong out there,
Chris. I want to say of all – this, I'm pulling this number out of my ass, but of all players who have maybe, what, like 20 at-bats in the season so far, or even way less than that, he has to have, like, the least amount of hits of anyone, right?
Well – in his past 20 at-bats over the past week, Chris Carter has two hits, neither of which were extra base hits, and he struck out 11 of those 20 times. Brutal. This guy is Adam – it's like I think the first year when Adam Dunn signed with the White Sox, that's my best comparison for Chris Carter right now. It's a guy who you knew was either going to hit a home run or walk, but in years prior had hit home runs for the most part, and then the wheels just completely fell off.
And – here is the crazy part, because last week I picked Evan Gattis, who was absolutely terrible. Who's leading the AL West right now? The Astros, everybody. Welcome to the first 3 weeks of the season, where small sample sizes mean everything goes
well,
crazy.
Well, in the Astros' defense, though, their rotation has been on point so far, and the bullpen behind Gregerson is much improved. So that kind of shows, yeah, small sample, but on the flip side, pitching's going to win championships, as the Royals and the Giants both showed last year.
Yeah, well... the Royals didn't exactly prove that, but one team did.
just taking the look on your face before yes, you even said it.
Yeah, honestly, I'm just going to enjoy these past championships while this year I focus on other teams because I'm not feeling great.
You guys are the every others, you know?
Yep. But the reason I was frustrated this year, is because they really had a chance to break that. They really did. But at the same time, next year is loaded with in terms of free agent pitching, and that's exactly what they need. So it'll all work out, even years, guys.
And then for my cold pitcher, I'm still not really positive how to say his name, so I'm going to go for it. Is it Taijuan Walker?
Honestly, I don't know. I just go with Taijuan because it sounds cool.
Maybe like pronounced like Cajun, you know? But with
– so regardless, the guy
we
whose name
ask
starts
him
with,
on Twitter.
The guy whose name starts with a T and is Walker on the Mariners, he had a spring training where – I'm pretty sure he didn't give up a run all of spring training. Everyone was super hyped. This is a guy who's been a top prospect for the Mariners for years, has always had the good stuff, and it was finally okay. Felix and Iwakuma between Walker and James Paxton finally had their two guys to keep them company in the rotation. He then proceeds in his two starts so far to only last 7 1/3 innings pitched, where he's 0-2. He's given up 14 runs. His strikeout-to-walk ratio is 6-6, which leaves him with an ERA of 17.18 and a 2.86 whip, which even for those of you who don't really know baseball should at least know an ERA of 17 is about as bad as you can get, other than Matt Latos after his first start when it was 94.
How many innings has he pitched also?
7 1/3 amongst two starts. When he pitched against the Dodgers and I was there, he looked horrible. And it wasn't even that he was getting hit that hard. It was just he couldn't find the strike zone. And this is a guy who to me looks maybe like he could use a little more seasoning in the minors.
Well, his big issue in the majors so far, because he did have a call-up last year as well, has been command. So who knows? Maybe he's still just getting nervous. Also, I have tweeted at him. It's at Ty, T-A-I underscore Walker, if anyone else is trying to figure that out. And also of note, I was offered a trade in our league earlier this week, Chris Sale for George Springer and Tyon Walker. Isn't that the most absurd thing? Obviously, I rejected it.
Wait.
It's such a, like, sell high on two players who are doing abysmally.
Who offered you said trade?
It was Bueno Bueno.
Ah, Brian Dorf, the commish. You should always avoid that.
I could be wrong about Walker. Maybe I don't remember. I just saw George Springer and I was like, ew, no. But
ew, no.
That's how you have to react.
Wait,
to trades sometimes.
What exactly did you tweet at him?
I just, oh, sorry. Well, you talk about your player and I'll, here you go.
No, I told you I literally had the same player.
So oh, okay. I said, how do you pronounce your name? Keep trying to get it right, but I'm failing. I just
should have said phonetic spelling, please, with like disease, please.
I didn't think of that hashtag in time. Maybe I'll.
No, I'm all about the hashtag.
Maybe I'll just send him another one. So my hot players of the week, as I said, are both from Tampa Bay, and they both revolve around one trade that got them there. So back in the day, aka just a few years ago, the Rays traded James Shields to the Royals for Will Myers and Jake Odorizzi. Odorizzi at the time was viewed as a guy who had great hit and miss. Well, I just totally spaced out on the phrase. Anyways, he got great swing and miss stuff. There you go. And he never really had the command, but this year things have been looking amazing for him. Through, I think it's four starts, he has a 1.74 ERA, a 0.68 whip. I think it's three starts. And in his last two, he went 8 innings in Toronto, and he went 6 against the Yankees but struck out 9. He's looking great so far. Really looked like he's turned the corner and potentially a guy who could be who could definitely be a number two guy, maybe an ace in the future. And the other one revolves around the other end of that trade when Will Myers was flipped to the Padres and the Nationals were involved as well, netting the Rays Steven Souza Jr. He has been absolutely a boss, looking like he could go 20-20 this year. He's already got 3 home runs and 4 stolen bases, and he is just looking awesome. I don't know what else to say. Big fan of both those guys. Even without Andrew Friedman, the Rays are still making things work. It's been impressive so far.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I'll add is with Odorizzi, when this rotation gets healthy, if the Nationals can just hang in there, or the Nationals, God, the Rays, talk about being out of it. I mean, they have him and Archer at the top, and they're still going to get Alex Cobb and Matt Moore back. That's a very, very potent 1-4 in the rotation.
And that's not mentioning Drew Smiley, another person whose name I can't pronounce.
I always just think Smiley.
Yeah, that's why I like saying Smiley because it's almost there. But anyhow, sorry about that, folks. Their rotation is totally stacked. And if they can just get a little more hitting, I mean, Kevin Kiermaier has been pretty good for them. And, of course, we have Souza's. We talked about Evan Longoria, et cetera. They still have the chance to be a very good team. Okay. So it's that time of the show where we take a break. When we come back, we will get to our tweets of the week. and get into the one of the most amazing manager implosions in recent history. And, of course, we will talk about the Chicago Cubs. 2015 is maybe the year for them, like Back to the Future said. This is MLB Talk, and you are listening to UCLA Radio. Welcome back to this edition of MLB Talk. You, of course, are listening to us at UCLAradio.com. And if you would like to replay this episode because it's so great and you'd love to see us struggle with technical difficulties, you can do that at UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. That's UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. And I think it would make sense, as we often do, to begin the second half of the show with our tweet of the week.
I always put it in my head. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes if I'm feeling it, I'll just say tweet tweet on the air, like I did right there. So, who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Go for it.
You know our favorite parody account, Dodgers GM with a Z.
Well, now it's Dodgers.
Then it turned into Dodgers with a Z senior advisor, which apparently has been shut down. So there's a new account. His name is Ned 2.0.
Yeah.
So, and honestly, I just wanted to grab, this may not be his best work, but I still think it's funny. It says, Yasiel Puig will try not to bat flip anymore. It seems bats took so long to land that it violated the new pace of play rules. Bunch.
That's a classic one. He actually,
classic Ned.
So, there's a whole article about this on Deadspin, his whole thing. And essentially what happened is Ned Coletti was like, felt like he was being bullied on Twitter because of this account.
That's
because,
exactly what it is.
And basically, the guy who runs the account, who's chosen to remain anonymous, he said, you know, it's actually more of a compliment that even though he's no longer the GM, I've still decided to stick with him. He said he's doing it out of his love for Ned Coletti. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing there.
His love.
You know, he likes Ned Coletti a lot. What can you say?
Fun of him.
And honestly, I think it's great. I love his account. So glad it's back. It's not a different account. He just had to change it to Ned 2.0. Because there's lots of stuff about parody rules on Twitter. It's very complicated, actually.
I didn't know the parody.
Yeah, go check out that Deadspin article because it's really interesting.
I figured it was something along those lines, but I didn't know the exact reason.
Yeah, so basically Ned Coletti hates Ned 2.0, but everyone else loves him. So I'm going to go next. I'm going to do one that is just sort of tangential, and the second one will bring us into a topic. So this first one is from @BrianMacP, and it's, well, here it is. Darren, are you O'Day? Are you O'Day? Are you O'Day, Darren? I just love that. I don't know. It's just hilarious. I don't know. I have nothing else to say. Yeah, it's got to be dramatic. I can't just drone it. Otherwise, it won't come off the same way it is on the page. All right, your turn.
I was also going to use my tweet of the week to segue into a topic. So do you want me to just go for it from
Battle
here?
Battle of the segues.
Whose segue do we want to go with first?
You go ahead.
All right, so my tweet of the week was from a guy who I've never heard of ever, but I guess he's from Jersey, and I'm from Jersey too, so I like that. So this tweet is from @SportsTalk953. His name is Steve Tannen, and the tweet is, we Jersey people on Brian Price's F-bomb tirade think to ourselves, like, and, question mark, no conversation. For us, this is normal conversation around the holiday dinner table. Step up. So as a segue for that, for those who don't know what we're talking about, Devin Mesoraco, who's the Reds' all-star catcher, has been on and off the field with injuries the past week or two. And when reporters asked about where Mesoraco's whereabouts were in the at the end of the Reds game yesterday, Brian Price, for the next 5.5 minutes, proceeded to go on a tirade like one we haven't seen since the Dodgers' Tommy Lasorda in terms of a baseball manager. He proceeded to use the F-bomb 77 times and, I believe, used 11 other variations of curses. Personally, the guy's my new favorite manager in baseball, but I could definitely see how this is not going to end well for him or the Reds. Do you think he gets fined? What do you think happens with Brian Price from here?
But just before we even get into that, like, if you're angry, I understand you need to, like, let it out. I would not choose that form 77 times to let it out in front of a press who will hound you, and this will never be forgotten in his entire career for as long as he lives.
I I absolutely agree with that. What amazes me is his complete and total misunderstanding of the sport of baseball. As a game, he's completely entitled to what he has problems with and what they were talking about. But it's not just a game. It's not. It's a sport. People watch it, and billions of dollars are made on it. He does not have any understanding of how that works, and I feel truly sorry for him because it's definitely shortened his managerial career as a member of the Reds. I know that for a fact. I honestly thought he was a pretty lousy manager to begin with, so now I only think less of him. And to be honest, it's absolutely hilarious, but I like to see smart managers who make good moves, and it's just a little bit sad. Like, yeah, it's an advantage for the Cardinals, but if you found out that Adam Wainwright was going to miss a start because of something, that would be an advantage for you. So it's just the game, and I don't know. I think someone now needs to make one of those musical remixes of it.
Oh, you know there already is like 10 of them out there.
We should. I'm going to get the research department on it. It may or may not be our last song of the day today. Okay, so anything?
Are we allowed to play those expletives on the air?
Well, maybe they'll be bleeped. I mean, technically it is the internet, so we'll see. So first we'll get the research department on it, then we'll get the legal department to talk to us about profanity issues, and then we'll do it. So stay tuned for that. All right, I've got one more tweet. This one is from @JoeSerrato1. Chris Bryant's jersey number now, 17. Chris Bryant's jersey number in spring training, 76. Year America was founded, 1776. Chris Bryant is going to save America.
Even when I read that, I was just like, oh, Andrew would really get a kick out of
it. It's amazing. Stupid coincidences like that just crack me up. Like,
is that like
500 people like retweeted or favorited that?
I just feel like that's not really a coincidence as much as it is someone desperately searching for numbers to make meaning out of it. Sorry, I hate to break it to you.
Well, that's what I mean.
But like, I know, but
that's what I mean by like coincidence.
I know, but like, it's just not a very obvious coincidence. It's someone who really had to like, you know.
I guess that kind of makes it funnier. He put a ton of effort into finding that coincidence.
That's what I'm saying. The effort that went into it.
I don't know if he's going to save America, but I guess this tweet is definitely a great segue. What's impressed me most about Brian so far, you know, he's only been up not even a week, but he was really quick to adjust from his debut in the next game. His first game was last Friday. He started with 3 strikeouts. And then the next day, he singled. He had 2 walks. So for me, a guy who in his second game can make a plate adjustment like that. Now, listen, this doesn't reflect to a full season. Eventually, hitters are going to challenge, or pitchers are going to challenge him more, going to exploit his weaknesses a lot more. But the fact that he can adjust that quickly from day to day, I think is definitely a very good sign for Cubs fans who, as only Cubs fans and maybe Raiders fans would, were booing Brian after the first game and saying he was a bust because he struck out 3 times. Give me a break.
Wait, that actually happened?
There were people tweeting that Chris Bryant was a bust after his first game. This is the guy who you've been pegging.
Are you surprised, though?
No, it's...
I mean, I don't agree with it either, but I'm just not surprised.
No, it's Cubs fan, Raiders fans, maybe some obnoxious Mets fans. But it takes a special fan base who have been suffering a very long time to label a guy like that a bust so quickly.
Well, to be fair to Raiders fans, though, when they felt like Jamarcus Russell may not work out after the first game, they were pretty spot on about that. So their cynicism is definitely warranted. But, yeah, that's, of course, ridiculous. I think Bryant is going to strike out a lot this year. That's just sort of the nature of his game at this point. But with that kind of swing, if you're already at the majors, you're going to at least do something. So really looking forward to that first home run from him when it does happen. And also in that first start, I mean, James Shields just got him with some perfect changeups. So it was definitely a tough start, but I'm expecting a ton from him. And also related to this, the Cubs did absolutely nothing to hide or camouflage the fact that the only reason Bryant did not start with the team was to get that extra year of arbitration. Should the Cubs be congratulated for that, being honest about what they are and what their plans are, or is that something that is unfair to the fans who deserve to see the best team play every game of the year.
I think they should be commended for their honesty just because they're being upfront with the fans and saying, listen, we're sacrificing 2 weeks and only a handful of wins to get this guy for another year on the back end. Because if he is the superstar that he is, you're going to want him on the back end. But on the flip side, they called up top prospect Addison Russell today. And I think the secrecy in which that was kind of handled was very impressive to me because I had no idea or any indication that he was playing second base and was going to be making his debut today until it happened. And a fun fact like that going to Tweet of the Week, he's one of the first National League players in the past, like, 70, 80 years, somewhere in that end, to make his debut hitting ninth as a position player in the National League. And for those of you who don't understand the significance of that, it's the pitcher usually hits ninth. Everyone else sits in front of him. Joe Maddon's a really unique manager. He's doing his own thing. So I thought that was an interesting tidbit. And I think just to build off Russell debuting, that's going to be a trade where them giving up a half year of Jeff Samardzija for this guy, Addison Russell, who's a consensus top 10 prospect for really a few years now, we could look at that and say, you know, of all the moves Billy Beane's ever made, this was the one major, major dud.
Carlos Gonzalez. That is what I would point to right there. To be honest, Billy Beane has gone through so many guys, it's hard to pick one. He's made so many good moves and bad moves. I will, because, you know, he had Prince Fielder was in their system. I mean, you could, there's a ton of guys, but it's absolutely up there. I agree with you. I think, honestly, I actually don't hate him hitting ninth at all. It gives you two leadoff men, really. I mean, of course, if he comes up with there with two outs, it's tough, but still, if he gets a hit, you get to the top of the order, and that's something. So I think that's really interesting, and expecting very big things from him, absolutely. And that should really solve their second base problem, because I think it's since 2007-ish, the Cubs' second baseman as a group have had an OPS of like 621, which is absolutely abysmal, worse than the majors by a lot. So that's definitely going to change things for them, and I'd say it's probably their weakest position on the field at this point. So that's a big upgrade for them. However, there is a very notable player who is now out of loop. His name would be Javier Baez, and he probably belongs on the Houston Astros at this point. So I'm just curious what you guys think. This is very, very premature. But would you label Javier Baez a bust?
I don't know if I would go so far as to call him a bust yet. Because even in the minors, you knew what you were getting with this guy was. He had immense power. He's a righty, correct?
Yeah, he's a righty.
He had this immense right-handed power. But you knew going in that the strikeouts were an issue. And I think most guys, by the time they leave the minors, do, you know, tighten up on the bat speed a little bit and the plate discipline. And he just hasn't done it yet. So I don't think he's a bust, but I think he's someone who definitely needs work in the minors at this point, because you can't strike out like this guy does, no matter how much power you have. Even Adam Dunn, who was the biggest strikeout or bust guy that I've ever seen, you know, he walked enough to justify him being in a lineup every day. Baez, they need to do something, whether it's shorten his swing or just get him to swing at less pitches, but he's on his way to being a bust. I wouldn't call him that yet, though.
Here's my thing about Baez. I don't disagree with your... I don't disagree with what you're saying in essence, but Javier Baez was called up last year. He played 50 games and struck out 90 something times. In spring training, he had basically the very, very, very similar plate discipline. I have no doubt in my mind that all the Cubs staff have been telling him, shorten up your swing. Here are some things we can work on to change your approach. Here are ways to improve your batter's eye, etc. None of that stuff has worked. And for a team to call up a player and then demote him and then promote a player who has the exact same positional preferences, so to speak, that he does, is to me just a huge red flag. I think that he hasn't figured out plate discipline, and he, at least on the Cubs, may never figure it out. Because I just don't see where he fits into the equation. It seems like Starlin Castro is there to stay. And if you had to pick between Castro or Baez, I would take Castro. Right? Would you agree with that as well? Maybe? Okay. So, I mean, in terms of potential, Baez maybe has more. But I just think that to show no improvement over this amount of time is a huge concern. And for me personally, I'm going to go out there on a stretch, not afraid to be wrong. I think he's a bust. Okay, so moving on to something that we've been keeping very close track of here, because I think on some level we are all big fans of Masahiro Tanaka. So we've been discussing this a lot on the show, and I've been waiting to get Nadia's take on it. So I want to know, have you felt like Tanaka should be pitching this year, given what's going on with his arm?
I think from his first start, I was nervous. Because with a guy who had that surgery, had the rest that he did, but he's so used to working like he did before he got here with that workhorse arm that put him in the first place, it made me a little nervous, and I was expecting a lot more. And I think that he's selfishly, and for the state of the current Yankee starting rotation, I need him in there, because what else do we have? But for his... Chase is making a face.
It's just funny, because when talking with Andrew about this the past couple weeks, I definitely had the opposite approach of that he should shut it down for the sake of the Yankees, because this is sort of a lost cause, in my opinion. With this start that he had this week, was it against the Rays, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Rays lineup isn't great, but at the end of the day, he threw seven shutout innings with eight strikeouts. He, to quote Dumb and Dumber, went out and totally redeemed himself in my eyes. Where do I think he should still be shut down? Yes, but I'm going to say give it a few more weeks at this point. This was a very encouraging sign to me, where I still think surgery is going to be inevitable, but why not? The Yanks are playing 500 ball. A-Rod's carrying the team there. Beating the Tigers 1-0 right now. Why not?
Why not?
I mean, I already feel like he's just been shut down for so long, which really isn't even that long, considering this is his second season on the team. But, I mean, I do not foresee the rest of the season without him.
I think that this proves only one thing about Masahiro Tanaka, that he can still be good while pitching 88 to 91. That's all it proves. It doesn't make his arm less damaged. It doesn't make the Yankees really too much better, because he's not as good as top of his game Masahiro Tanaka. He's not. He could honestly, he could be a very quality pitcher the way he's pitching right now, but it's not the same guy. It's just obvious. And for me, just because he can be effective this way doesn't mean that's the right choice for the team. I think next year could be, if everything falls into place in terms of free agents, and I don't know, maybe you get what's the name of that second base prospect? Oh shoot, I can't remember. There's a second baseman in the system who's close to being called up.
Rob Refsnyder?
Yep, there you go. Refsnyder. I think next year things could really, really become a lot better for them. And to potentially sacrifice Masahiro Tanaka for this season is still a mistake. And I can't change my tune on that. I do love the conflict it creates. I think that's like... It's exciting. It is, because you have to say, all right, as fans, what's more important to us, winning or seeing the best team that can be on the field right now? And it's a super interesting question, because it's very hard to answer. I can say, as a Giants fan, maybe this year improves the team in the long run, but right now, this is brutal. This team, the Giants have had terrible stretches exactly like this over many seasons before, and people can absolutely argue, oh, well, it's just the beginning of the year, so it looks exceptionally bad, but you just look at the way the team's playing, and you know there's problems. And so for me, I'm just, like, focusing on everything else in baseball right now. So maybe there is value to saying, you want to, who cares if next year this hurts our chances of competing? I want the team to be better. I want to be able to say, Tanaka's starting today, there's a reason to be happy. So I think it's a really interesting conflict.
One thing I will ask before we get to the WWE match of the week, an opinion question I have for both of you guys. There's three teams I'm looking at right now who are, I would consider, overachieving right now. The Tigers is not one of them. I think we agree the Tigers are legit. But that said, you got New York's lovable losers, the New York Mets at 10-3. The John Hart complete rebuild Atlanta Braves at 8-4, and my boy Caps, Colorado Rockies at 7-6, just absolutely being carried by their offense despite Kyle Kendrick being their ace. Of these three teams, do you think any of them are legit for the long haul?
Rockies, absolutely not. I do not think are legit.
Here's the thing about the Rockies. If they could manage to hold it all together, and by the way, Corey Dickerson and Nolan Arenado are both sitting today because they're hurt, so they're not holding it together. If they could, they could honestly be a decent team. They could. But it's just not the pitching doesn't it can't hold up enough to the point where if they take one injury, one major injury, which seems to happen to them enough, it's over. So to me, the Rockies aren't legit. I think the Braves, they're a rebuilding team. They've made it obvious. Right now they're doing well, and you know they'll continue to. They could have a winning record and continue to rebuild. But I think it's early for them. The Mets, however, they are very legit. I like what they are doing so much. I think they're really going to surprise people this year, and to have this early confidence is huge. To build out of a hole is also fine, but to start the year knowing, okay, we're good, we can play really high-level winning ball for this amount of time, that, I think, gives enough confidence to the players to where they really have a chance this year.
I just don't like living in a world where the Mets are the better New York baseball team.
You have to think of it from
that's going to – and it's that world is starting to turn.
You have to think of it from their perspective, though. As much as I love to shit on the Mets, and trust me, there's nothing more I enjoy than exerting my superiority over Mets fans. It's been a very long time coming for Mets fans to have their day of reckoning. So I'll tip my hat to them, and hopefully we just rebuild in time.
Okay, so I think we are going to end the show a little early today. Thank you so much for listening. I apologize for... to Chase because we can't do WWE this week, but we only got a couple minutes, so I would like to be able to hear the audio of Eye of the Tiger at the beginning, because the combination of you just killing it and Eye of the Tiger is great, and I don't want to mess that up. So thank you so much for listening. We will be here next week, same time, same website. This has been MLB Talk. You are listening to UCLA Radio, and thank you for swinging by.
Back by the beach. Still gonna bring the heat.